Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. If you go down to Pier 15 in San Francisco over the next few days, you'll see a giant green ship anchored there. And it has nothing to do with the America's Cup. It's an activist ship called the Rainbow Warrior. It's part of a fleet of boats run by the environmental group Greenpeace. Greenpeace International's executive director, Kumi Naidu, says, quote, "Since setting sail in 1978, the Rainbow Warrior has been on the front lines of the struggle against environmental abuse. She's an icon of nonviolent direct action. And a beacon of hope for millions of people around the world," end quote. So what does the Rainbow Warrior do, actually? Mostly direct action and civil disobedience. The mission is to protect marine life and ecosystems from human-inflicted harm. The crew has front-row seats as they witness the devastating impacts of global warming, and they risk their own lives in the process. The original Rainbow Warrior was bombed by the French government back in 1985, and 30 members of the Rainbow Warrior's sister boat, the Arctic 30, are currently imprisoned in St. Petersburg, Russia, for a September action they took to challenge shale oil drilling in the Arctic. And we'll get an update on those activists on today's show. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about ocean activism. What do you want to know about it? And what is it like to be an environmental activist at sea? Today, we're joined by Joel Stewart. He's the captain of the Rainbow Warrior. Joel has been a Greenpeace captain for the past 25 years, and he joins us in studio today. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
And welcome to the Bay Area. We're also joined by Karen Topakian. She's board chair of Greenpeace. Karen got involved with the group in San Francisco in 1987 when she joined the newly created Nuclear Free Seas campaign. This international campaign worked to rid the world of naval nuclear weapons and to end below-ground nuclear weapons testing. And Karen also joins me in studio. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for inviting us.
So, first off, we did a show this week about ocean acidification. We did a show yesterday about fracking. I mean, there's so much going on with the environment right now. And Joel, as the captain of the Rainbow Warrior, working with an organization that has so much experience, where does Greenpeace fit in the movement today?
Well, Greenpeace is famous for the use of its ships, and that allows us access to the remote parts of the world. And we are able to go across borders and cross culture and go to areas that others can't go. So we carry out research, do actions, and that really sets us apart. And what we've done now with the Rainbow Warrior, we've designed and built a ship specifically for our needs, and we've really got a good design concept going on here. You can really notice the ship. It's got two high A-frame masts and 13,000 square feet of sail area. So we've really lowered our carbon footprint on this, and it's a great action tool for us, good communications. And this is like an investment in the future we've done. We decided we need a new ship for the new problems and new challenges we face, and it's been a huge success so far in the 2 years we've been sailing it. We've almost finished our first circumnavigation. And it's really quite an honor for me to be at the helm of such a great ship with such a great team of people as Greenpeace.
And also, it's just a beautiful ship to look at. What reaction do you get from people when you anchor and allow the public to come on board? Because tonight, for example, you're going to be showing a film about climate change, Postcards from Climate Change. And that is tonight at Pier 15, 8 o'clock. It's free. And then on Saturday, there's going to be ship tours all day. Sunday, ship tours and family day all day.
That's right. Yeah, 10 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday. Well, the first thing, people come down and they're amazed at the ship. It's really quite an iconic symbol, and it's very impressive for anybody, even if you aren't familiar with what Greenpeace does. Just from a sailor's point of view, it's an interesting vessel with some really good concepts and designs. It's not a yacht as much as a working vessel. It's got a heli deck on it that we can remove the backstays and land a helicopter and a heli hangar to put it inside. We've got a couple of big A-frames for launching our boats so we can have rapid access to the water, good communication systems, and all the spaces that Greenpeace needs to have an action and campaign vessel.
And Karen, you've been working with Greenpeace since 1987. Where do you see the organization when you think about where it fits in today's environmental movement?
I see Greenpeace as an organization that's always pushing the edge. We have big, bold ideas that when we first pronounce them, people tell us they're crazy and they're never going to happen. Like when we decided that, or we decided, but we believe that Antarctica should never be mined. It should not be owned by any one country, and it should not have any mineral extraction take place there. People thought we were crazy, and it took several years, lots of petitions, and people actually living there in Antarctica, but that is now a national park, an international park area, where people can come to visit, but no one owns it, and no one can destroy it. And that was a very crazy idea when it was first promoted. And now it exists. So we like to promote the big, bold ideas, and then we like to see them come to fruition. That's where we fit in.
And what have you learned from some of the past campaigns? What do you think is most effective?
Well, the campaign that I worked on that you reported on was anti-nuclear campaign. And what we saw was that people then and now continue to be very afraid of the possession and potential use of nuclear weapons. That has not changed. The threat and fear have not changed. But you don't get anywhere talking about anger and hatred. This organization is about hope and passion and compassion. And passion for the environment, hope, and actually that we love our planet, we love the people who live in it, and we love the all the species here, and we want to protect and defend them. That will get you a lot farther into people's hearts and minds. And because we practice nonviolence in everything that we do, we're always looking to find that human value in people, even who we may see as our enemy. They're people who are doing, or countries that are doing things that we don't want them to do, and we think are wrong and destructive. We're always looking for that human connection to bring them over to the way of thinking that we are. Same with corporations. That's how we sustain it, and that's how we win.
What would you add to that, Joel?
Well, I totally agree with that. I feel very optimistic working with Greenpeace because we have solutions and we're finding ways forward on the planet. So I think that if I didn't, I'd be depressed and I'd go hide in the woods someplace because we do get bombarded with all this negative information every day about all the serious threats facing us, what's happening in Fukushima, the oil spills, and all these toxic catastrophes, and you know what just happened in the Philippines. So, but to me, well, it's like it's very simple. Like with climate change, for example, we know what the problem is, we know what the solution is. We have to stop burning CO2, and we have to get the greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere. So that's very easy. We know what the problem is, and now it's just a matter of finding the way forward. And we have some great people working in Greenpeace with strategic visionaries and people that know how to carry out our campaigns and actions. Like you mentioned World Park Antarctica. That's a great example because now we're actually asking for a global sanctuary in the Arctic. And these are ways forward. These are solutions.
I always sort of dream about, you know, it'd be so fun to take a couple months off and join a ship because I'm sure you have such a completely different vantage point than even those of us who pay very close attention to what's going on. So what do you see as captain of this ship that we miss?
Well, we're out there on the front lines quite often, going from country to country. One of the biggest parts of what we do is going into the different communities and inviting people on board. And when they come, they tell us their stories. And so we listen to people around the world. So we know that the extreme weather events are serious. We know that's a problem. We find out what's happening when the forests are being destructed or when the pipelines are going into their communities and the oil spills or when all of these things we hear firsthand and we go out and see it. So I've been working with Greenpeace since 1989 and I've seen a number of environmental catastrophes around the planet and, you know, from blocking toxic pipelines or, you know, hearing scientific reports about the damage that certain toxic technologies will cause. And so we see this firsthand. And I know that, you know, irrefutable evidence of climate change means we have to do something right now. It's quite alarming, like coral reefs, for example. We see them dying and we'll probably lose those within our lifetimes by 2050 if... I hope it's not too late, but we need to act urgently. And that's the one thing I see going around the planet is a necessity for urgency in our actions.
So out of a year, for example, how many days are you on the ship?
We usually do 3 months on and 3 months off.
Okay. So 3 months straight.
Yeah.
What is that like?
It's quite intense. By the end of the 3 months, we're usually quite tired, but we're able to rotate in and out of the job so we don't get burned out. We want to make sure that the ships stay as active as possible, and so we find the right ratio of getting rotating people through so we don't get too tired. So the ship's operation doesn't depend on any one person. We have a big team of people that are ready to step in.
That is Joel Stewart. He's captain of the Rainbow Warrior. Joel has been with Greenpeace since 1989, and the Rainbow Warrior is docked at Pier 15. There are events happening over the next couple of days. There's going to be a movie, Postcards from Climate Change. It's a film about the moving stories of lives directly affected by climate change, and then a Q&A with the team that created the film. That's tonight, and it's at 8 o'clock for free. On Saturday and Sunday, you can take a tour of the ship at Pier 15 from 10 to 5, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Karen Topakian. She's board chair of Greenpeace, and she's been involved with the organization since 1987. And we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about ocean activism? Where do you think Greenpeace fits in the overall picture of environmental activism? If you are an activist, what do you think is most effective? We've done a couple shows this week on these issues, and the big question that always comes up is, what is most effective and what should we do about this? On the ocean acidification show, Ken Caldera said, we know what we need to do. He said, no more tailpipes and no more power plant pollution. That's it. He said, we know what we need to do. So how do we get there? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Karen, can you talk a little bit more about just what is involved in deciding what kind of action to take and how far to go?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I was thinking about the answer that I just gave you, and it's deeper than what I had said because there's more. There's scientific research that we do. We don't just decide on something and go out and do it. We have the facts behind us. We have the research behind us. We have the researchers and the scientists behind us. And then we look globally. Where are the big problems? Where can we be effective? Where can we be strategic? And where can we win? And these are decided globally by the global organization. We're located in 27 countries and regions around the world. We are located in both hemispheres. We are located in all hemispheres. And the campaigning decisions are done jointly by leaders in those countries, decide what are the most important issues, in what way can their country participate in those actions. So you might ask, like, why would somebody maybe in Argentina worry about climate change? And what's their role for maybe Switzerland to talk about that? But they may be looking at it from a banking perspective, or some country may be looking at how they can participate by looking at it from the social media perspective. So everybody can play a role. It's not just people who live in coastal communities. Everybody in the Greenpeace world can play a role. And our campaigns are global. And they're intended to be global because they're global problems. We're not going to solve them. Even if San Francisco became the greenest city on the planet to live in, and we're doing a very good job, that's not going to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. So we need to have global solutions. And one of the ways that Greenpeace does this is by looking at all of those factors, deciding where we can be, and then always looking, how can we confront and bear witness? Taking us back to our Quaker roots. We're not religious people, but we do really believe in the Quaker belief system in bearing witness. That's why we went to Amchitka. That's why we go to the Arctic. We want to bear witness and bring that back to everyone else. We want to show you what is happening so we'll reach into your hearts and minds so you'll join us and help us stop it. That's the whole point. And we're global, independent, and action and nonviolence is a cornerstone of what we do, always.
And Joel, as captain of the ship earlier, you said that what's effective is you're able to go in some of the most remote parts of the world. Can you give us some examples? Where have you been recently and what did you see?
Well, on the Rainbow Warrior, we went down to the subantarctic islands south of New Zealand to look at some of the beautiful areas there, and we did some photograph of sea lions and whales and albatrosses. And the reason we went there was because there's a Texas oil company, Anadarko, which wants to go and drill in the deep water off of New Zealand in 1,300 meters. And so, yeah, well, we were down there. We wanted to do something with our ship to stop them, but the timing wasn't right. They were delayed. But right now there's a peace flotilla of private sailboats from in Greenpeace going out in the front of that drilling ship to try to stop it. So that's a good classic example of Greenpeace in action, that we've organized that. And another really good example, of course, is what's going on in Russia right now, which we'll get to. But my friends and colleagues at are trying to stop the oil development in the Arctic is one of the very good examples of what's going to remote areas.
Yeah, and actually, do you want to just give us an update before we take a few calls about what's happening with the Arctic 30? Your colleagues were arrested and incarcerated by Russian police. They were detained in September while trying to scale a giant Arctic oil drilling rig, charged with piracy and hooliganism. These were the same words used to charge the all-female punk band Pussy Riot.
Well, these are ludicrous charges. Our crew are not pirates, and they're not hooligans. And by any legal definition of the word, they are not guilty. And they didn't have a right to seize our ship, and they didn't have a right to arrest our crew. There can be two or four people that could be arguably called for doing illegal trespass, for breaching a security zone, and we're willing to own up to that. But we are not pirates. We are not hooligans. And to have 22 years in a labor camp is what they're facing right now. They've been 56 days in prison already. They're quite likely going to get another 2 months, and this is a pre-trial detention that might be a total of 4 months, and then they're facing 22 years in prison. Now, this is a classic example of the challenges we're up against and the powers to be. Gazprom, the big Russian oil giant, has partnered with Shell, and the two of them and several other oil companies are poised to move into the Arctic right now, and we're standing up there to stop them. And I'm so proud of my friends and colleagues that are in prison right now for making that stand for us.
Have you been in contact with them? Is it easy to find out how they're being treated and what it's like?
I don't have personal contact with them, but our lawyers have contact. There have been very few phone calls to the immediate family. There is not the access we want. They were just moved from Murmansk to St. Petersburg. They're just going to be out of quarantine. We're hoping to get more access to them soon. But their voices are not being heard right now. This is an obvious attempt by the oil companies and the government that supports them to silence our people. And that hasn't worked in the past, and it's not going to work this time. We're going to raise our voices, and I just hope we can get them out really soon.
If anything, this has garnered more support for our work because people realize the gross injustice that is going on right now with these charges. And so I think people in my family who normally would not necessarily support Greenpeace have come out and signed petitions because they can see the injustice taking place here. Mm. So I think actually if the Russian government thinks that, one, we will back down, and two, we will lose our credibility, both of those things are untrue. Because if anything, more and more people are flocking to support us and to be in unison and harmony with us and trying every avenue possible to get them released and to get the charges dropped, and then focusing back on the issue at hand, which is the Arctic. That's the issue.
And that is Karen Topaki, and she's board chair of Greenpeace. She got involved with this organization in 1987. Joel Stewart is captain of the Rainbow Warrior. He's been involved with Greenpeace since 1989. And the Rainbow Warrior ship is docked in San Francisco at Pier 15. There are a number of events over the next couple of days. You can find out more information, yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions about ocean activism, what do you think is most effective when it comes to this kind of activism? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. And let's hear from George in San Francisco. Hi, George. Welcome to the show. Hi, is George there?
Hello?
Hi, George. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, salutations. No way we would ever see 22 years in a work camp. So whatever it is that we have to do to spring those people, let's be about it. The question that we have is that inasmuch as most of our solutions are really in the distance and that we're in transitions toward those solutions, tell us something about the specs of the Rainbow Warrior, because, of course, you want to build a ship which is a model for green navigation. And we hope that you can tell us something about the kind of a power plant and other features of the Rainbow Warrior that make it a model.
Yeah, well, first of all, it was designed specifically for sailing, and so we have the underwater shape of the hull is very good for sail performance. The size of the rig and the amount of sails, 1,288 square meters or 13,700 square feet of sail area, is in five sails. But it's also very easy for us to set the sails, so we don't need a large crew. If we're at the high seas without traffic, two people can set all the sails. So it's very easy to put the sails out and strike them when there's no wind. So we use it as much as the time as possible. We're trying for 70% of our propulsion energy from wind. Hmm. And we also have diesel engines on board. Now, I would have liked to have gone with some type of real model that really gets away from fossil fuels. But at the time we made the design, we had to turn in the contract. And Greenpeace can't wait to be perfect. And we didn't want to use our donors' money to go into a very expensive research and development into new technologies to use on the ship. And there would have been cost overruns and time delays. We did get the most environmentally sound diesel engines we could, the Tier 2 low-emission ones, and we even added some emission scrubbers on top of that. And now my challenge as a captain is to use those engines as little as possible. So our crew all uses the sails as much as we can. We can feather the propeller so it goes just under sail power. And then we have a diesel electric so we can use an electric drive for small inputs of energy so we can really finally control how much actual energy we need.
Great. And George, you can find more information about the ship and how it was designed on the Greenpeace website. There's a link at our website, yourcallradio.org. And thanks for calling. Let's go next to Walt in Santa Cruz. Hi, Walt. Hi, Walt.
Yes, yes.
Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, greetings. Fine. Hi, this is Walt, and perhaps you might remember about 8 years ago or so, we were running phone patches via single sideband radio back and forth in order for people to stay in contact with their families. And I'm the operator here in Santa Cruz that did that over the amateur bands. I don't know if you remember that since you've been captain a period of time. I think Steve was the radio operator. We used his credit card to arrange to do that from the Santa Cruz area here. Now I think you're using emails, things like that, for the personal communications of the crew. But listening to you, and I'll be down in Santa Cruz to say hello, and I was wondering if Steve is still on board by chance.
Steve's not on board right now. I was just sailing with him last summer in the Arctic Sunrise, so he's still with the organization, but he's on a different ship right now. I don't know if I was on board at that particular time, but we still do use radios a lot, and we still carry a radio operator who's also our IT person. We do use a lot of satellite communications. We're primarily internet-based communications now, but we use a lot of radios for backups as well.
Yeah, and of course the long-distance personal communication of the crew can be done by email and satellite work now, so the old ways are archaic. But I wanted to say hello. I'll be down this weekend and wish you all the best, and know that you've got a lot of friends here in Santa Cruz and the group that used to do all of your personal communication for your crew members every Saturday.
Great, thanks. I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Great. Okay, terrific. And I'll get off and listen to you, and let's see how we can support the Greenpeace and get people out of jail.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Walt. Thanks for calling in. Before we go to break, actually, we only have about a minute, so I'll ask you after the break. I'd love to know what it's like to sail in the Arctic, just what it looks like, what it feels like, what you see. That would be great. Today we are talking about environmental activism, and specifically activism on the ocean. The Rainbow Warrior ship is currently docked at Pier 15 in San Francisco, and over the next few days there will be a number of public events. Tonight at 8 o'clock there will be a screening of a film called Postcards from Climate Change. It's a free event, and then on Saturday and Sunday you can take a tour of the ship from 10 to 5, and again that is on Pier 15. And today we are joined by Joel Stewart, captain of the Rainbow Warrior, and Karen Topakian, board chair of Greenpeace. So what questions do you have about ocean activism? We'll also talk about what happens when the ship goes into hostile territory. What kinds of laws do they have to follow? How do they decide where to go? And then also the never-ending question that we ask on all of these shows, what is most effective? And at this point, what issues are most pressing? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Call on KALW San Francisco. We invite you to join in today's conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. If you'd prefer rather to write than call, the email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can simply post a message if you prefer at yourcallradio.org.
Your call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll discuss media coverage of the devastating typhoon in the Philippines. A Filipino delegate to the UN Conference on Climate Change is refusing to eat until action is taken. Real action is taken. And if you haven't seen his speech, you should, because it's just really incredible. And then we'll also discuss China's crackdown on foreign journalists. That's tomorrow. Today, we are talking about activism on the ocean. The Rainbow Warrior ship is currently docked at Pier 15. It's a part of a fleet of boats run by the environmental group Greenpeace, and we're joined by Captain Joel Stewart. He's been with Greenpeace since 1989. Karen Topakian is board chair of Greenpeace. She got involved with the group in 1987 when she joined the newly created Nuclear-Free Seas Campaign. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What do you want to know about ocean activism? What issues do you think are most pressing, and what is most effective? We have an email from Dan, and Dan wanted to say, Karen, when you talked earlier about being compassionate, he writes, I believe that environmental activists should meet their opponents with compassion, but at what point does denial of climate change become a war crime? Politicians and denial groups are committing genocide against our future generations.
I don't disagree, but that doesn't mean I can't have compassion for the people who say that. I don't disagree at all, and I feel like the climate deniers set us back in time. If we don't win this, we all lose. Every sentient being on this planet will lose if we don't win on climate change. And the climate deniers have their agenda. They want to continue to extract every drop of fossil fuel out of the earth, regardless of where it is or what it takes to get it there. That's their agenda. And climate deniers, I believe, are criminal. I believe that what they say and what they promote sends us backward in time, and it's very anti-intellectual. And that bothers me also on like a personal level that they do that. But truth wins out in the end. And I know that truth will win out in the end, and those people are becoming more and more marginalized, as they should be.
Does it surprise you that the media does give them so much airtime?
Yes, and it's actually disappointing that they do. It's kind of like they feel like that's the way to get fair and balanced journalism. And it reminds me of the time when many of us were on the street opposed to the invasion of Iraq, and there would be 20 people on a street corner in some suburb, and they gave them the same amount of attention as thousands of us on the street. That's not fair and balanced journalism. And so climate deniers, if we deny them oxygen, they'll go away.
Joel, what are your thoughts on this? And when you travel around the world, do these kinds of things come up, just about what the United States has or has not done, or what politicians here have said?
Yes, it comes up all the time. And one of the big questions we find internationally is people are asking, why isn't the United States taking more action on this issue? Everybody knows. If you study the peer-reviewed publications from actual climate scientists, there's compelling, overwhelming evidence that the climate change threat is the biggest challenge we have right now. It's real, and we have to do something about it immediately. And the urgency isn't being voiced by the scientists enough, and that's one thing Greenpeace is trying to make sure that voice gets out. Climate deniers are, to me, criminals. That is not right to know that there's a serious threat, and to promote the economic interests of some of these large corporate or private interests, like the Koch brothers, for example, that stand to make $100 billion from exploiting the tar sands. We cannot take the fossil fuels out of the ground and put it in the atmosphere. It's that simple. And any company that tries to push that agenda is going to be guilty, and the future is going to try them. This may not be illegal now, but it will be illegal soon. Maybe we can just grant them amnesty up to now, but from now on in the future, everybody knows it's a crime, they should be put in prison for it, or they should at least have to pay in some way, because we see what's going on around the world. And although you can't blame any one extreme weather event on climate change, we know that this accumulative impacts and the heated oceans are going to be fueling larger and more frequent storms and ice melt, all of these things that the scientists are telling us that is happening right now. And we've got to move urgently, and we've got to leave the fossil fuels in the ground. It means everybody's got to get out of their car, and you start have to make life choices where you can design your life around using an automobile. We're going to end the age of fossil fuels. If we end it sooner, we can survive it without too much loss.
And in addition to getting people out of their car, we have to be promoting within our own government, local, national, federal, whatever it is, mass transit. And a big infusion of money to make mass transit accessible, safe, affordable, and available. And that will get people out of their cars. San Francisco has a transit first policy. A lot of people who drive don't like that because that means they're not first. It's transit first. And if the rest of us, the country, adopted that, or the world, then we would be in a lot better place. And I just want to bring up one tiny point. For the past 20 years, Greenpeace has been talking about climate change, starting in the early 90s with our atmosphere and energy campaign. I hate to say we were right, but we were right. And we were right about some of the most horrible things. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say I told you so, because it's not about that. But it's about when we have these big ideas and these scientific theories behind us and practices, pay attention, because we've been proven right. And now we see what happens.
Do you think people realize what's at stake here? Because as you said, Joel, and so many scientists that we have on the show say, if we do not act now, the coral reefs are dead by 2050. In fact, our guest on the Ocean Acidification show, Ken Caldera, said this is comparable to a dinosaur extinction. And if we continue to fish like we're fishing, the fish will be gone by 2050. I think it's a lot of people say, what are you talking about? They just can't really imagine that. Do you find that people understand how serious this all is?
It's, well, I'm sorry to say, but in the U.S., there's a lot more ignorance than you find in a lot of places. But around the world, there is a lot of ignorance on the actual impacts of climate change. It doesn't just mean that we're going to be able to go without a jacket when we go out in the street. It's really a serious problem. Ocean acidification. The world's oceans are probably 30% more acidic than they have been in the last 250 or perhaps 300 million years. That means we're going to lose coral reefs. But you know, what's really frightening to me is what's going to happen to the plankton. Because with the ocean acidification, if you lose zooplankton, that's the bottom of the food chain. And that means we're going to lose all life, or the majority of the life, in the oceans. We're going to end up with the oceans full of algae and jellyfish. And so it's great to save whales, but if you don't save the plankton, there's going to be a lot more problems than just the whales. And you add on top of that the cumulative impacts of overfishing. And then you include into their oil spills going on top of the surface of the ocean. The plastics is dumped into it. And the very real threat right now, the elephant in the room, is what's happening in Fukushima and the possibility if that building number 4 collapses, and what are we going to face there?
Right.
So then you get mutagenic effects of that. And remember on the plankton, too, this is responsible for over 50% of the oxygen that we get. And the reason why the oceans are turning acidic, of course, is because the CO2 is being absorbed. So this is a oxygen CO2 interchange going on here. That's our life support system. You know, I like to breathe oxygen. We need to save the oceans. We need to leave fossil fuels in the ground. We're committing planetary genocide if we don't.
I think it was a few years ago, Elizabeth Colbert from The New Yorker wrote an article about ocean acidification. And true to The New Yorker, it was many pages long, and it took up two issues. I read that, and I was crying reading those articles, because you could see the whole story played out before us if we don't stop doing what we're doing. And she articulated it so clearly and so precisely that you looked at this and you thought, there's no way we can continue to extract fossil fuels. And I think that article was 2 or 3 years ago. I think the reason people might not see it, because their everyday life has not changed. If you live in the Philippines right now, your everyday life has changed. Mm. But let's be honest, is the everyday life of people in Northern California changing? Not by much. But you talk to farmers, and they will tell you that crop growth has changed. You look at people who actually work with the soil and with the planet. with our plants and wildlife, they will tell you they see changes. But the average urban dweller doesn't see it. And we have to see it. That's what makes it real. So one of our jobs at Greenpeace is to see it and make it real.
Well, to that point, and we have an email from Damien in El Cerrito. He says, the guest stated that the main goal of Greenpeace is to bear witness to environmental issues. It would be as important then to disseminate this experience as widely as possible. Can you comment on how Greenpeace shares their experiences? Because I'm rarely aware of anything Greenpeace does, yet I'm very interested in what you do. My children know all about whaling in the Southern Ocean, for example, because of Animal Planet. It was this education of the issues via popular media that, well, they're talking about Paul Watson, not ex-Greenpeace founder Paul Watson's combative efforts that affected a reduction in whaling. National Geographic and other such organizations put education before research. Shouldn't this also be the case for Greenpeace if the main goal is to bear witness?
It is, and we actually have a very robust, doesn't even come close, social media campaign. So if people want to know what's going on with Greenpeace, I'm sorry to say we're happy we're here and you all promote it, but not every reporter and every journalist writes about what we do. So in the age of social media, I can go directly to the people and in many cases bypass the press. So if you're on Facebook, friend us. You will get lots of information. Go online to greenpeace.org and click the button to become an activist, and you will get information there. We spread it around. We have a robust media team around the world in every country and just about in every office. We spend a lot of time on communications and on images and on video. And sometimes the press don't report it, so come directly to us and we'll show you what we have.
That is Karen Topakian, chair of Greenpeace. She's been involved since 1987. Joel Stewart is the captain of the Rainbow Warrior ship, currently docked at Pier 15 in San Francisco. He's been with Greenpeace for 25 years, and you can take part in free events over the next few days. Find information at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Margie in Monterey. Hi, Margie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to thank you for the work that you guys are doing with the oceans. You know, I'm an activist, and I've taken on some issues that I've been told before, oh, you're never going to get that done because it's too far down the line. And what I have found is whenever you want to do anything that is so big and you're taking on huge, and you guys are definitely taking on huge industry, you have to, number one, you have to dummy it down because people don't have time to read two pages of the New Yorker. It's informational, but the truth is that the average person is not going to do that. They can barely read a paragraph on the internet before they feel like they have to switch the screen. Number one, dummy it down. And, you know, the other thing is that when you take it to the people and you show them how it's relevant to them in, you know, in 10 words or less, I know it sounds very simplistic, but that's the truth with politics today. There's a story today, and next week it's not going to be the same story. It's going to be something else, and it's always something else. So, you know, my advice is you've got to build a coalition. You know, I took on a big, myself and a few other people took on a really big project that we were told, you're not going to get rid of them. They're already in. They're going into CEQA. And what we did was we built a coalition. We built a coalition of ag, business, local people, migrant workers, and it was that coalition that ultimately ran the project away because it was a polluting industry. Same thing. They were dummying down their message when they went out and they talked to the public, and the first thing they did was, well, you know, you haven't had science in a long time. Neither have we. This is so complicated, but let us explain it to you. And the average person falls for that. But when you take the message out to the people and you take the time to go a little bit door-to-door, they take your message and they spread it for you.
Well, Margie, thank you for calling. Let's get a quick response from Karen.
Well, I would say on the 10 words or less, that's the beauty of Twitter, 140 characters. And there are many people in Greenpeace who use Twitter as their form of communication. I would say the coalition is true. Greenpeace is in lots of coalitions with many organizations. We're in a democracy initiative coalition with folks from the NAACP and the communications workers. We're in coalitions on every single campaign we work on. We work with other organizations, whether they be local, large, small, national, it doesn't matter. We know we can't do this alone, and we know we need the support of others with us. And you're absolutely right. Coalitions, I don't like to say dummy it down. I'd like to say make it something. You have to write it so it's relevant and people can hear you. But you're absolutely right. The average person reads less. And you know what sells them? Images. And you know what we have? Tons of them. Archives full of images of our actions. If nothing else, we photograph everything we do from every different angle. So if a word doesn't tell the story, our pictures absolutely do.
All right. Thank you for calling, Margie. Let's go next to Linda in Santa Cruz. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I guess would be called a flaming environmentalist. I started giving my very first donation was to the Rainbow Warrior when I was 19 years old. And now I've been involved in all kinds of environmental stuff. But now I find myself in the unlikely position of being a citizen climate lobbyist. So I've joined up with Citizens Climate Lobby. I now go to Washington and lobby legislators about a carbon tax and revenue neutral dividend. And the reason being that I see the connection so strongly, and probably most people who are citizen climate lobbyists have a very strong connection to environmental preservation. So what I'm wondering about, and the idea of, the Citizens Climate Lobby carbon tax and revenue neutral dividend is that we tilt the playing field towards making the market amenable to alternative energy solutions and leaving the carbon-based fuel in the ground and making a market approach to that particular, change. My question is this. I understand Greenpeace, is an environmental organization and speaks for the environment, but how much do you find yourself or are you able to make these links, to these other kind of movements which are actually probably motivated much out of an environmental, passion?
Well, let me talk to you about the democracy initiative that I mentioned before. Our executive director in Greenpeace U.S. is Phil Radford. He's in Washington, D.C., and he connected with Ben Jealous at the NAACP and a gentleman who's the head of the Larry Cohen, who's the head of the communications workers, and looking at democracy and looking at money in politics and talking about the fact that we haven't had any broad sweep environmental legislation in this country in decades because of the money in politics. So if you want to change things in Washington, you got to get the money out of politics. How do you get the money out of politics is the Citizen Democracy Initiative that we've been working on with other environmental groups and with what you might consider to be, or Greenpeace might consider, unlikely allies. And now we're very close allies with the NAACP. It's not that we weren't before, but we just didn't have the common ground. And now we have the common ground with them and the labor unions. And we've been very effective at working on this. So, yes, we have got to reach across the aisles to people who have a similar ideology or a similar goal, and we have to work together. And we do. And it's important that we do.
Well, thank you for calling, Linda. And also, just given what we're facing, when we're talking about civil disobedience, Joel, can you elaborate on that? And how do you all decide how far to go and what tactics to really take?
Well, we have a very good training for everybody involved in Greenpeace and especially on the ships, which is our nonviolence training. And that goes back to our roots, our Quaker roots, and some of the people we model after, like Mahatma Gandhi and Kinsara Wiwa from Nigeria, different people that have done peaceful, nonviolent protest, and that's our core principle. So whenever we do civil disobedience, we make sure we don't do anything that will endanger other people, like the other ship or their crew, or put our own people's lives at risk, and we don't do anything that's violent. And we are very, very careful not to do that. And I think you can see that with the Arctic 30 people when they were arrested on the ship. You can see them using the body language they've been trained to use with their hands up in the air, being non-aggressive and passive. And that sends out a clear example. And also, before we go on to any ship or vessel or do anything, we'll call and say, we're Greenpeace and we're nonviolent and we're not pirates and we're doing a peaceful protest and exercising our freedom to protest.
How do you decide whether or not to go into hostile territory?
We have a senior management team that works on our campaign strategies, and then it goes out to a ship's proposal, and then we look at it and we decide if it's safe to do in a ship. We get our lawyers in to do a risk analysis. There's quite a process involving a lot of people within Greenpeace to make sure that it fits in our campaign strategy and our way of bringing it about. And it's not just a random decision. Usually by the time we go to do an action, it's after years of research and lobbying and attempts to resolve the problem in other ways. And this is usually is the last resort when things just aren't working, like getting oil companies out of the Arctic, for example. You know, we've been trying to do that. We've been in many, many meetings. Governments aren't acting. And that's what we have to do to get people's attention to draw. Somebody has to stop it. And we don't have too many other ways than to put our own lives or our liberty on the line to try to keep these things from happening.
And in the case of the activists in Russia, they were trying to scale a giant Arctic oil drilling rig. And then they were arrested, and they've been detained now for 2 months. They're in St. Petersburg, still in custody. I mean, that could have been you, right?
That could have been me
because
or my crew.
You take part in these actions?
Yes, I do, yes. And, well, the entire ship, 28 activists and crew and two journalists. So it was also just a journalist that went along that are in prison right now. The assistant cook, the electrician, the engineer, everybody in the ship that was just there to operate the ship, they all got arrested. But the crews on the Greenpeace vessels are very motivated people, and we believe in the causes that the Greenpeace is working on. And I know that all of these people there on the Arctic Sunrise want to see the Arctic protected. Gazprom is a huge influence in Russia. You know, they're responsible for half of the world's oil spills. It's like 33 million barrels of oil a year they spill. That's seven times the amount of oil that's spilled in the Gulf. You don't hear about that because they have a very tight lid on the media there, and they're trying to silence us now. They don't want people to know how atrocious their environmental record is, and Shell's not much better. You know what they've done up there in Alaska last summer, and they want to go back into Alaska, and Shell has signed on with Gazprom. We cannot trust these people in the Arctic, and that's why I think we have a right to go in there and to make civil disobedience. We tried to hang a banner. We didn't do anything to hurt the oil structure. We just tried to put a small little yellow banner on a 550,000-ton steel structure without actually blocking anything. Didn't endanger anybody's lives. Didn't hurt anything. Just trying to send a message, trying to save the Arctic. And this is a response we get out of it. So I think that we have to look at the real moral crime of what these companies are doing, knowing that climate change is real, knowing that it's killing people in the Philippines and around the world, and it's going to cause complete climate chaos for generations and generations to come, then those are the real criminals.
I want to say, Rose, that as I've done civil disobedience with Greenpeace and on my own since for the past 30-some-odd years. I've been arrested more than 40 times doing civil disobedience in five states in the country. Defended myself in court, done all of those things. And it's always been from the principle of nonviolence. And the reason I got started working with Greenpeace is because it was the only organization where I could live out my belief of nuclear abolition and do it from a perspective of nonviolent direct action, because that's core to my principle. And that's why I've stayed connected to the organization all these years. And I will tell you, the rigorous and robust training you go on before you sign up to do a Greenpeace action, you talk to lawyers, you talk about personal risk. There's opportunities to say, no, I can't do that if you really feel like you can't do that. And the training that you go through on nonviolence can't be more rigorous, because exactly what Joel said, it is paramount. We have to keep our people safe and the other people that we're dealing with safe. We are respectful, we are honest, we are straightforward, and we are always nonviolent, right to the core.
Does what happened in the Arctic, how does that affect other activists, or does it make them want to get involved even more?
Well, I've already had several people volunteering to crew another ship and go up to Russia, but that's not something we think would be beneficial at this moment. We have more and more people coming down to the ship saying they want to get involved, and I would just like to get support of everybody that's listening today. Please go to the Greenpeace.org webpage, and there's a sign on there for a petition to help free the Arctic 30. We have more than 2 million people around the world so far that have signed on, and we want to just make a groundswell of support to really show Russia and the world that we want to get our people free. And what my people in prison right now, what they want and what we all want, is the Arctic free of oil.
Has the Russian government commented recently on this? I haven't heard anything.
I haven't heard anything either. And, you know, there's a lawsuit going on right now in an international court by the Dutch government because our ships are all flagged by the Dutch government, and they have filed a lawsuit that it's a violation of the law of the sea. And that decision will come out in the next several days. So we will see what the decision is and what the Russian government does to respond to that. And that will be telling for what portends in the future.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment on that. The International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea, it's a UN convention, and Russia signed on to that. They should abide by the ruling, but they've already said that they're not going to abide by the ruling. But I hope that it does influence them.
What's next for the Rainbow Warrior? Where are you going next?
We're going to complete our first circumnavigation. We'll go down to San Diego, and then we'll be in Mexico, Colombia, and then up to the east coast of the U.S., continuing our climate and energy, and also working on GMO and sustainable agriculture.
And I have to ask both of you, because this has come up this week, in terms of policy changes, what would be at the top of your list, Joel, top two policy changes?
Well, first of all, to have a real climate policy, and that's going to have a number of benefits like green jobs, clean energy. It would be a tremendous boost to our economy to shift away from fossil fuels. So first policy would be to stop the subsidies to fossil fuel companies. That's the number one thing that needs to be done immediately. That's a no-brainer. Why are we still doing that? So stop the subsidies. That's going to level the playing field. And then we can start working on economic solutions and creating real jobs that are going to move our world into clean energy. That's number one. And if we don't take climate policy seriously, then we've failed as a nation and as a world. So we have to do that. There's many, many other policies, and I think that if you go to the Greenpeace.org webpage, you can see a lot of our campaign strategies lined up. I wish I had time to explain all of them.
No, I think it's important to talk about these, though, because we talk about the problems, but there are so many solutions. What would you add, Karen,
I would add zero deforestation.
Yes.
Keep it in the ground. Keep those trees growing. Zero deforestation, particularly in places where by extracting it or burning the wood, we're contributing to it. So those would be the things that I work on that I would promote. And then personally, I'm a huge mass transit fan. My car died in 1999. I never bought another one, and I'm not going to. I live in a city where I have good mass transit. I think everyone should have access to good mass transit, along with education and health care and shelter. Good mass transit.
Karen Topakian is board chair of Greenpeace. She's been involved since 1987. And Joel Stewart is captain of the Rainbow Warrior ship. He's been a Greenpeace captain for 25 years. And the Rainbow Warrior is docked at Pier 15. There are a number of events tonight. There's an 8 o'clock film, Postcards from Climate Change. 8 o'clock, it's free. And you can tour the ship on Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 5. Karen and Joel, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss media coverage of the devastating typhoon in the Philippines. A Filipino delegate to a UN conference on climate change is refusing to eat until real action is taken. We'll also discuss China's crackdown on foreign journalists. We'll be joined by Reuters' Paul Mooney and the Earth Island Journal's Mark Jason. Join the conversation and call in with your questions on the next Your Call with Holly Kernan and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.